Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Podcast where we're absolutely sure we don't know everything. What a special episode, because I'm joined by Hippo. Athlete, a.k.a. Henrik Rogutnig, a.k.a. my boyfriend, a.k.a. Rigit Fit on TikTok.
Not my legal name.
Oh, my God. Hi.
Well, hello.
Thanks.
We're in a new spot.
I know. Your first time in this new energy era of our apartment.
And all I can say is the energy is high.
It's good.
The aura is unbelievable.
Right? It's good vibes in here.
And I got a sleeping hippo on me.
I know. What a task.
Life is complete.
Hey, confidants. I thought it would be fun. And I know I've talked about this book before and this concept before, maybe on episodes with Zach back in the day. But I decided to reread a book called Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski and Nagasaki. And Henny decided to read it with me. We were both listening to it on audiobook while you were on the other side of the country.
True.
And we would like each get to a certain chapter and then we would like chat about it. And it felt so eye-opening and amazing and helpful in our relationship. And last night we were laying in bed and I was like, you should come on and like talk about it from a man's perspective, because you were saying last night, you were like, I feel like the target demo actually for this book is first like women that struggle to achieve orgasm or like feel stressed out about that. And yeah. Two, should be men.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as a man.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't know. I think just overall ideology surrounded by the woman's body is like so. It's just like you go out in life and have fun, figure it out.
And get improper messaging and believe in toxic masculine behaviors.
Exactly. Just all kinds of signals. And so this one just like very cut and dry, clear, to the point. A lot of research, it was very insightful from that point of view.
And don't you feel like I get angry that we're not like introduced to a book like this in frickin' like high school?
Yeah,
because I'm like men would understand everything about women and our bodies so much more deeply nuanced, empathetic towards sexual desire and interaction with women. Like, everything that this book covers is stuff that I think men either ignore, never think about, or don't bother to learn.
Yeah, I think the easy thing for guys is just like, doesn't matter. I'm good.
Yeah,
you know,
I came.
My girlfriend's doing great.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, she's just like not having it at all. So I think it's such an easy thing where it's just like such low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You read it and you're like, the average guy is just going to be like, oh, okay.
Bruh, confidants, make your man read this fucking book. Because if he wanted to, he would. So this episode, we're going to dive into questions like, why does my libido go up and down like a roller coaster? Why do I sometimes feel broken when my sexual parts aren't doing the things I'm told that they're supposed to be doing? And why does stress kill my sex drive faster than bad Wi-Fi? So buckle up. We're about to dive into everything about desire, arousal, and sexuality. So the number one like big takeaway, it sounds very simple, but it was pretty profound for me. And the author drills this in this book, is she talks about the core messaging being, you are normal.
Yeah.
Like, we are all so fraught with teachings of what a singular sexuality model looks like. That anything that doesn't fit into an often cis hetero white behavior is wrong.
Yeah. Social media, I think it's getting better where people are like not so hush hush, not talking about things like that. But the messaging, like, you know, Hollywood, like, it's always been such a cut and dry, this is how it is. If you're not in this, you're just a weirdo.
Yeah.
And that's just not how it is. Everybody's normal in their own way. Like, there's so many different versions that are just exactly who you are.
I'm curious, because the messaging I grew up with, and I'm sure this is, like, pretty common amongst a lot of listeners, too, is, like, as a woman, I'm supposed to be desired first. Then I'm supposed to be pursued. Then I am supposed to instantaneously be turned on by the person that is pursuing me. We're supposed to know exactly how to touch each other's bodies the first time we ever hook up. And we're supposed to have crazy good eye contact and talking back and forth, that we just know each other's bodies. And then we're both supposed to climax at the same time. And then we're in love. And you never get pregnant. You never get an STI.
And you're bonded for life.
And you're bond, and everything's like, what was the messaging? What did it look like from, you know, attraction to actual sexual intercourse? Do you feel like was your messaging growing up that you were told?
I think I grew up in a very just like toxic masculinity, ruled the world growing up, played all the sports. So like that was my core, was like that was the messaging that was like blasted to me in movies, in everything, like all media. It was always the athlete, the toxic masculine, like just like be a man, everything, no crying, no doing anything like that, no emotions. And then to like relationship wise, like, yeah, it's basically exactly what you said. It's just like, you're just supposed to sweep somebody off their feet. You have an amazing connection from day one. There's no like, nah, you don't need to talk to them. You don't need to communicate what your desires are, your ons and offs, that kind of stuff. And so it was very much of that tune. And just like so vanilla in the sense of like, that's how it is. And there's nothing else in the world like that.
Yeah. And like, we also get told we're not allowed to talk about this stuff, like, God forbid, with the person we're actually doing it with, which is so funny to me. And I think that's why conversations like this, and obviously if you're here listening to this podcast, you know me, I believe this is like a huge, big piece of like connection. Sex is connection. And it's not even like the physical act. It's the way in which you actually connect with someone during the process. That is, I think, like what I'm trying to get down to.
I think the like comfortability of being vulnerable with that person while feeling like it's a safe space to be vulnerable, because like so many people are not vulnerable because they just don't feel safe, or there's not a safe space where like, okay, you know exactly how I'm going to react, or like there's no thing where I'm like, oh, if I do that, maybe he's going to go, you know, whatever, that kind of stuff. And so that's, I think, the biggest thing is like the vulnerability and like being open and like communicating about that to get to that point, because it's not like, oh, I'm just going to be vulnerable. Cool. Yeah. Let's have fun. It's okay, how can we communicate to get to that point?
Yeah. You brought up something kind of like, you said, the ons and offs. And I wanted to talk about like beyond the core messaging of like, you are normal being a huge piece of what I got from this book. Because literally it's stuff that happens inside my head that I'm like, no one else must deal with this during sex. This is like just me specific, lol. But she also talks about, the what's called the dual control model. So sex and your sexual response and desire is made up of the dual control model, which is essentially accelerator, which are things that turn you on, things you like, things that feel good, pleasure, and brakes. So things that make you shut down, turn you off. Yes, the accelerators and the brakes. And I am also reading another book about like love, and they talk about sex and stuff in it. And in that book, they talk about the dual control model of like, so much of us think about arousal and desire and sex in general only as accelerator. So we're only thinking about, does the way this touch feels good? Like, am I turned on? Am I attracted to this person? Is he doing the right thing? Is he touching the right place? We rarely ever think about the brakes, which are arguably the more important part of figuring out what are your sexual brakes.
Yeah.
So for that, it can be like, external factors, simple as, you know, stress, or you have a work pile up, or like you don't feel good or you're tired. Or it can be something a little bit more nuanced, like, I don't know, you have ADHD and your brain is wandering, or the way they touch you isn't really like hitting that spot quite good. And then you get in your head because you're like, I don't want to say anything because I don't want them to feel bad. And now I'm already out.
Yeah.
So what was your like, did you have any aha moments about like the dual control model?
I think from just like obviously never hearing about that specific terminology until that book, obviously you have those like turn on and turn offs just like from general knowledge and like going through life and everything. But I don't think it was ever like said so clearly to me where it was like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
The other thing was like, that was very interesting, was the difference between female to male, in a sense of like, obviously female had a way higher variance of like really high brakes, really high accelerators, or really low, you know, whereas men were usually more in the middle ground. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's outliers and everything like that, but it was where men are like a little less,
have very sensitive accelerator, but less sensitive brakes.
Yeah. And I think the thing where obviously I thought about when I was talking to you was like, because of like video games where you can set your sensitivity, like where women are just like on 10 sensitivity, where you just move a little bit and just flying, like that kind of thing. And so that was a very kind of interesting way to like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Right. And like talking to your partner about that, of just like, where's your, like, does the littlest thing turn you on? Like, does a breeze in the wind turn you on? Because funnily enough, I have very sensitive accelerator too, which in this book they would define as like a very like male centric trait.
Yeah.
But like, I have the weirdest things that turn me on or like remind me of sex. And I'll give you an example of one. I don't think I've ever even told you this, but it's very, like, I don't know where in my brain it paired this thing with sex, but now whenever I see it, my brain goes like, I could be horny right now. But it's the locks at our gym.
Oh, wow.
When I am doing something with the locks.
That is very interesting.
And I don't know if one time I was like really horny when I was fiddling with the lock.
So back it up. So is this, did it only start when we started going to the gym we're at, or is it
like, no,
have you seen that lock somewhere else?
No, since we started going to the gym.
That's amazing.
And it's so funny because I can also just be aware of it. Like today I was just aware of it. I went, huh, I'm thinking about sex as I'm doing the lock on the gym. And what a weird fucking thing, normally I would say. Yeah. But after reading this book, I'm like, I have a sensitive accelerator. Like turning the locks on my gym door can sometimes remind me of sex and being horny.
I don't know. Because I don't think she spoke too much about it, but in terms of, like, obviously everybody thinks, like, guys are always horny, that's like, compared to women, but I think in reality, just women don't speak about it as much.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, like, the most random things also is just, like, I mean, guys are just popping boners left and right kind of thing, but I also it's just, like, oh, yeah, that made me think about sex, or, oh, that made me think about that. And I think it's just because people just don't talk about it as much as well.
And the same thing with sensitivity on breaks, like... Yeah. For men, they say, stereotypically, they don't have very sensitive breaks, but I feel like that's a myth.
Well, she did say, like, yes, stereotypically, but there's always, like, variance within that. So, like, the percentage that fall on sensitive or less sensitive, and I'm sure there is. I think it's just if you take 100 women, 100 men, the men are going to average a little bit closer to the median on the middle. But
and obviously, like, there was a big study done in the 2000s that proved this, where it talked about people with high brake sensitivity are more vulnerable to sexual difficulties.
Yeah.
Because instead of going like, oh, I just have like a high sensitive brake and I can figure out what actually lets off the brake a little bit and actually goes towards accelerator, I think something is wrong with me.
Yeah, because I mean, if you go through this without understanding, you know, even any kind of like the terminology of it, you're just like, oh, something's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Oh, why did I just, that just take me completely out?
Yes.
You just like power through and you have a bad experience. Yes. And you're just like, oh, that was horrible.
Correct.
I'm never going to do that again. Or that comes up, I'm just like, I'm completely out of it.
And I made those habits and patterns starting the very first time I had sex.
Yeah, and I think everybody does. And
yeah.
And I think that's also what was very interesting when another time in the book she's talking about, yeah, your first experience is such a huge kind of pivotal moment of what your kind of rest of your life looks like, yeah. or it like definitely influences way more than you maybe would think.
Yeah.
And that was also just like, oh, wow, yeah, that's yeah. never really thought about. And you kind of like, oh, yeah, that was first time, whatever. But if you look back to it, it's like it does influence a lot.
Yeah. And something that's kind of connected to this was talking about desire styles. Mm. So with like Brakes and Accelerator, you can also think of it as like spontaneous desire versus responsive desire.
Yeah, right.
So we see messaging in media that is mostly spontaneous desire. Mm. So the hot and heavy moment where you're thrown up against the wall or like you have an instant eye connection across the room with someone and you're like, I want to do them. Like, we are so drilled to believe that the way sex happens is with spontaneous desire.
Like instinctual, you know, everybody's just yeah. like, you gotta, it's gotta be then and there or yes. never at all kind of thing.
And the truth is the majority of people fall under responsive desire, which means they simply have to like introduce their body or their mind or something into the idea. And that's what turns them on. Mm-hmm. So they don't just quote, get turned on. They have to be like coaxed into it or introduced to it.
Yeah.
So the spontaneous desire is you get horny out of nowhere. And the responsive desire is you get turned on in response to something. So whether it's the context of the situation or yeah. the closeness or the physical touch or the mental stimulation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she had this one quote in there that I really liked where it was like, desire is not a measure of how much you love your partner.
Yeah.
So even if you don't have spontaneous desire, it doesn't mean you're not attracted to your partner. It doesn't mean you don't want to have sex. But they talked about in this other book that I'm reading about long-term relationships too. Mm-hmm. And people wonder why sexual desire, they feel like teeters out or slows down.
Yeah.
And it's a very like simple and obvious explanation that like, again, blew my mind when I relearned it. Mm-hmm. But your body and your mind, your monkey brain, your caveman brain mm-hmm. is always seeking closeness, is always seeking like relationship, trying to find a way to connect to other individuals. And so when you first start dating, your body's like, connect to this person. Oh my God, we agree on so much. This is amazing. And you're probably getting turned on really easy because your body is using that as a way to find closeness to this person.
Yeah.
Once you feel secure in your relationship, your body's like, I don't need to find close. I'm connected. Yeah. We did it. Mm-hmm. Yay. So why would I need to like drive up the horn dog factor, which is why a lot of times spontaneous desire can also then turn into responsive desire,
yeah, exactly.
which means you need to like put a little more work and thought into like making attraction happen with yeah. your partner.
I think that's where like reading a book like this together is like so underrated where it's just like, because then you both can use the terminology like, oh yeah, they understand that terminology rather than like talking to your, you know, partner and being like, oh, this kind of like turns me off. And then you don't know what the reaction is going to be because they're like, oh, you know, they don't want me to do this. But
oh,
in reality,
off.
It's because, yeah, we can read this book and like, oh, okay, that makes sense. This, you know, yeah. oh, okay, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where, yeah, reading this book is like, yeah, very underrated for
yeah.
couples or anybody just like reading with somebody else because yeah. they can reference definitely that directly reference to each other.
Yeah. And it's also, it was a big mind blowing moment for me realizing that often the best sex that I've had are with unstable relationships.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And that's not true in this case. Trust me. But in the past, like I found myself being like, why do we have amazing sex? But I literally can't stand that person. Mm. And that's because it was my body's way of trying to like find any connective tissue to make that relationship work.
Yeah.
And that actually made me feel a lot better.
Yeah, exactly. When you understand the science behind it or the understanding of it.
Yeah.
It makes you feel way more normal, you know?
Exactly.
And not just going through flying around kind of thing, hoping for the best.
Yeah. So a lot of people misinterpret low desire as a relationship problem.
Yeah, right.
Which I think is like the biggest like other pinpoint in this book where I was like, oh, wow, that doesn't mean like that actually. It's kind of a contradiction. like more closeness actually tells your body you'd need desire less.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that's why like breakup sex is so important, like, or so popular in a sense, because like it's your body just being like, oh, let's get back to the attachment and that kind of stuff, because you've obviously physically kind of I don't know what the word I was going for, but yeah.
Nailed it.
But
same thing as like the hot and heavy, like one night stands.
Yeah, exactly, as well.
Because you can make it up in your head.
Yeah.
What's the potential of this? You don't know the person. So it's like, and then for other people, one night stands sound like a fucking awful idea, because it's like, I don't know anything about this. I have no context of what this is.
Which then just obviously brings in your own personality style of like how, what turns you on. Like that's where understanding that makes it all the more easy for you to like understand why or when, and not feeling just like completely broken.
Mm-hmm. When we come back from a quick break, we're going to talk about why stress and context can be sex's biggest kryptonite.
Oh.
Confidants, you know I care so much about mental health and mental wellness, and this is a product I love and use all the time. Have you heard of NAD Plus? Okay, if you're not, you are missing out on one of the most exciting breakthroughs in longevity and wellness. I gotta tell you, I have been using Effecty's NAD Plus therapy for a couple weeks now, and it genuinely makes such a difference in my energy. Like, I wake up so focused, my energy levels are up, and I recover so much faster after long and stressful days. I can actually tell when I am not on it. And if you are looking for a simple way to feel better and recharge, this has been a total game changer for me. Okay. It's one of those things where I actually appreciate the upfront nature about Effecty's NAD Plus treatment and their transparent and fair pricing. Because the moment you sign up, you're going to know exactly what you're paying for. There's no hidden fees, unlike other companies out there. And it's so much more than just a service. It's like a partner in your mental health and well-being, because they have a dedicated group of professionals ready to support you anytime you need advice or have questions, whether you're just like looking to explore the benefits of NAD Plus injections or nasal spray, or looking for guidance on how to integrate them into your wellness routine. Effecty offers unlimited doctor support and are amazing at their customer service team. I'm not going to lie. So are you ready to recharge your body? Because right now my listeners get $50 off NAD Plus longevity treatments at effecty.com with code Kelsey at checkout. That's EFFECTY.com and use code Kelsey for $50 off. No hassles, no memberships, no hidden fees, just real results. Get started today. Confidants, have you ever just felt like a little off, not totally like yourself? Maybe you're feeling a little bit tie-tie. Ugh, I know I have been going through a lot of stress recently, and I've learned that it's maybe not sometimes just stress or, you know, lack of sleep. It could be hormones at play. And that's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. I actually took the quiz and it suggested that my body might be overloaded with the hormone estrogen, which could be affecting me in all different kinds of ways. And I got to start taking Hormone Harmony, which has helped with bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and so much more. Taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's about investing in your long-term health. And if you take this quiz, you're going to learn a lot more about your hormone balance and can make these small, intentional changes. We love that, confidants. And Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier, which we support and love here. And that means only using science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows, baby. Ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code Kelsey at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code Kelsey for 15% off today.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
So we're talking about stress and context as it comes to sex, and stress being one of the biggest libido killers. This has been a study like that's been around since the beginning of time, where they were like, women particularly don't want to have sex when they're stressed. Whereas like for some people, aka where they found the pattern the most in men, was that when they get really stressed out, it makes them hornier.
Right.
And again, like I funnily enough side with the men in this situation, where when I get like flustered and stressed out about work, I'm like, loads bone. That's something I know I can do and I'm successful at. But it also makes a lot of sense to me why people feel like that, like don't even touch me feeling.
Yeah, because I think when we were reading this and this came up, it was, I think we had the conversation of like, oh, where do you fall? Where do I fall? And what it made me think of was like the chronic pain, whenever I, you know, having any kind of discomfort, pain, that kind of stuff, that side of my brain is just out the window, you know, never talk, don't touch me, don't do anything. Like, it's just like, I couldn't get off if I tried.
Couldn't enjoy your body.
Yeah. And so I think obviously that's like an extreme, but where like people are in a stressful situation or something like that, that's where it's just like, no, that I can't even think about it now.
100%.
I think that's a lot more common for a lot of people.
And it's also because your body feels unsafe to be turned on.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like a big part of like context, right? She talks a lot about context. Like arousal is not about the right moves. It's about the right context.
Yeah, right.
So context being key, and like there isn't one right context for everybody, but you and, you know, hopefully you and your partner can find out what environments are the right context for you to be turned on.
What I'm hearing is all it takes is communication about everything.
I love that.
And I think that's, I mean, the core of so much that, I mean, in any kind of partnership, whatever it is, for like everything, it's just communication, where if you're, I mean, in the context of this book, when you're both reading it, like it just makes the communication way easier to like, okay, let's have this conversation. What are your ons and offs and that kind of stuff, where it's like you're in a safe space to then talk about that as well.
Right.
And that's where it's just like, okay, yeah, we can talk about everything and anything. Yeah, there's always like the more difficult things that you maybe don't want to talk about directly or that kind of stuff, or like work up to over time. But at least like, having that safe space to then be able to just talk about these things.
Because it's even like breaking down what, because some people are going to think like, well, I don't want to have to sit and talk about sex and like have to set up this grand context to feel turned on. Like, sex is just supposed to happen. Like, and it really breaks down that idea of like, no, that's actually not how it's supposed to happen at all. Like, talking about sex and scheduling sex and scheduling time to try new things and like play around is so crucial in opening up that dialogue.
Yeah. And it's just like, keeps you young, keeps you like, it's just, you're just having fun, you know. At the end of the day, you just want to enjoy each other and like enjoy what you have, like your body and everything like that. Like, why wouldn't you want to be able to like understand your body a bit better or that kind of stuff, where it's that just makes sense.
Yeah. And 100.
I think anybody that, you know, would want to do that is just like, yeah, why not?
Yeah. I think something that you and I had also talked about was when your body is reacting versus like maybe your mind isn't
the non-concordance.
Oh, talk about it. What is non-concordance?
This was kind of the other one where it was like, oh, wow, this is like so scientific, but also makes so much sense. And a big variance from female to male, where it's in terms of from the studies wise, it was talking about non-concordance, basically where your body is like reacting in terms mm-hmm. of like physically aroused, but mm-hmm. mentally you're not aroused or you right. are aroused. Like it depends on if you're in line with your body or not in line with your body. And for women, mm-hmm. it was 10% of the time.
10% of the time.
Basically never. Like 1 in 10 times, your body and brain is on the same wavelength.
Wow.
Which is like crazy. I mean, when you think about it, like from a male perspective, you're like, yeah, oh my God, like that's
if I'm hard, crazy. I'm ready to have sex.
Yeah, like, I mean, and then so on the other side, for men, it was 50% of the time.
Yeah.
Which like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
That's
like, whatever.
Still
like,
half.
That's yeah. not that many. You would think it'd be maybe more, but at the same time, 50% is 50%.
Sometimes your body do just be popping boners because that's the blood vessels.
Like, yeah, like I don't even know how many times in the night you're having a boner. But
and you're not you're not trying to bone.
No,
it's just your body doing
and
the thing.
And you get some random breeze or something like that. Yeah. Like,
the sheets get stuck a certain way.
So I think that's the various where it's the 50%. But that was like so interesting where it was just like, oh, wow. I never crossed my mind because it's just like, okay, a body is reacting. So
you must be doing something,
right? It's just like, oh, okay. But the other thing was very interesting around like traumas and stuff or like any mm-hmm. kind of essay stuff mm-hmm. where somebody witnesses or something like that happens mm-hmm. and their body is like reacting. Okay, like your body's going, okay, this is a restaurant. That was the whole thing where she talking about.
Yeah, she uses a metaphor. Like sex is a restaurant. So if I'm seeing sex, that's a restaurant.
Yeah, like any kind of context of sex. Oh, that's a restaurant.
So I want to eat there. I'm horny. I'm ready to have sex. So like the wires get crossed with like essay.
Yeah.
Where it's like... Yeah. That's a restaurant, right? My body's telling me this is a restaurant, but like the brain and obviously the consent isn't there.
Yeah.
But you can't always tell your body that.
No, exactly. And then when you don't you don't know about non-concordance and everything like that, your brain, you're like, whoa. Like,
you're
why?
Ashamed.
Yeah. I'm like, how am I, like, I'm broken. Why am I doing this? Like, why is my body reacting to this? But my brain is like, no, this is bad.
Yeah.
And there was a few good examples in that from a male and female perspective where it's just like, yeah, that can ruin your, like, traumatize you. Like,
totally.
Heavily for, you know, the rest of your life if you don't understand this side of things because it's just your body reacting. It's not it's not your brain. Like, you're not a bad person in that, but, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so that was also very interesting from that point of view.
No, and that can easily also be applied to, like, kink, too.
Yeah,
why does this thing turn me on? I don't know. Like, what happened between me and a fucking lamppost that, whatever. Yeah. But it's not. It's something somewhere along your journey of life. Your body took that as a cue, and it's not anything to be like ashamed of, unless obviously you're like hurting people and then you should seek help.
Yeah.
But it made me feel less weird about the certain things I find it attractive or turned on.
And I think the general scope around any kind of kink world is like, it is anything you're thinking about is way more normal than you think. The top kinks and everything like that, like if you Google top kinks, that kind of stuff, like it'll be
there.
Oh wow, I am not a weirdo or I'm not this, like that kind of stuff, where that's where it was just like she obviously goes into it more and everything, but you're at the end of the day, you're way more normal than you think. Like everybody has different levels of that and it's very interesting here as well.
And I like that she also just pointed out that there wasn't enough research on like people who identify as non-binary or asexual. Like they've been able to find some pattern in terms of sensitivity of like accelerator and brakes with people who are asexual. But she does say like we need more research and understanding about like that experience.
Yeah, it was very kind of like female, male, like very kind of vanilla point of view because that was all the research that they'd been able to do, obviously.
Right.
So hopefully it's, able to do a lot more.
Yeah.
I imagine so.
She also talks a lot about the importance of non-judgmental self-talk, right? So let's say you're listening to this and you're like, I'm all on board. This all sounds great. But I don't know how to actually put this into practice because the second I clam up about like talking about this or if my partner might not get it for a second and I'm like, never mind, this is stupid. Like, this is silly. Surprisingly enough, self-criticism kills that desire.
Yeah,
it does. It turns that brake right on because you have a monitor essentially as a brain that's judging not only what you're saying and like sending you signals to do things, but it's also anticipating and reacting to those things that you're saying and doing. Yeah. So you shouldn't be surprised to hear that women who feel more pressured to meet sexual expectations return less satisfied and actually more anxious. And I think that kind of lends itself to a conversation too about orgasm, right? Like we said in the beginning, we've been so conditioned to believe like orgasm is the achievement. It's the finish line. It's like whether or not you got sex, right?
Yeah, it's like getting across the finish line.
Yeah. And there is nothing I used to beat myself up for more back in the day than not being able to orgasm with certain people. Like I would just be like, I don't know. I don't know why. Like I can't. And I would find guys not having that same stress. Like if I slept with a dude and he didn't finish, he'd be like, well, yep, it happens. Well, like, it's okay.
Which I think goes the other side, because like the thing as a man that you will be berated on is if you orgasm too early. And like, that's the most embarrassing thing you can do is like, oh, you just started and you're that. And so I think that's a huge like kind of fear built into just men growing up. Wow. Like, 'cause that's all you hear. Or like, that's the embarrassing thing. Oh, like people making fun of that and everything like that. So that's the almost opposite. 'Cause then if you don't, you're just like, whatever, you know, it is what it is.
Like it's almost like I remember in high school being like, you didn't make me finish, so ain't my fucking problem. And I was like, oh God.
Yeah. Honestly, like that's, I feel like that is
an excuse.
Very like common from that point for men.
And so, you know, if you're someone that, like me, has struggled to orgasm with certain people or, like, at all, maybe, she talks in the book about taking orgasm off the table completely starting with just working on feeling pleasure and desire. Mm-hmm. And I did that probably in my mid-20s. I decided I'm not going to care anymore if anybody orgasms. Mm-hmm. Did I have fun?
Yeah.
Did it feel good? Mm-hmm. Do I feel like I can walk away from this saying, yeah, I want to do that again? And when I turned that switch in my brain, like everything became easier to also communicate to the partner, to the people. And like, I just felt less self-criticism.
Yeah.
For being like, from a dude's perspective, how do you find your thought process has changed from the way you self-talk? Like maybe from in the past to now?
I think I come from a very privileged point of view. Like I have never really had body issues in a sense. Like I've never really been self-conscious of me being naked or like that kind of stuff where that side of things has always been very easy for me, like self-talk wise. It's never been like, oh my God, I don't want to get like that, everything from that point of view. So I would say from that, it's always been like relatively easy in the sense, like it's not been, oh, I need to change this, change the thought process of that. I think going like piggybacking off of you, it's been more so, okay, was this enjoyable? Or I've always been like a big giver, that kind of person. So like, that's where I really have fun and joy, that kind of stuff. And like seeing enjoyment from other people. So that's always been kind of like the baseline for me. And then anything on top of that is like, oh, that's it. Just, you know, the icing on the cake. Icing on the cake.
Yeah, what am I cake saying? And icing.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cherry on top.
You're not
from
here. It's fine.
Yeah. Second language, whatever.
I had that feeling all around blowjobs. I was conditioned to believe you got to give a good blowjob. And I made it my fucking mission in high school is I was going to be the best blowjob giver ever. And it wasn't until my mid-20s that I went, do I even like giving blowjobs? I've been like patted on the back or head in this matter. Like, wow, you've done such a good... But do I even like it? And I'll never forget. And I think I've told this story either on the podcast or to you that like one day, this is back when I was with Jared, the DJ. We were together 5 years and probably like year four. I walked in one day and I just went, I don't think I'm ever going to give a blowjob again. And he just went, what? He was like, okay. And I was like, I don't think I like him. I don't think I want to do it. I think I'm done. And he was like, okay. I support you, you know, your body, and I just saw this poor boy losing a twinkle in his eye, and it really had nothing to do with him and more of like, I was just confronted with a big fat truth of like I was doing it for someone else. Mm. Like I was trained to believe, yes, I like watching someone else receive pleasure. That's what I'm telling myself. And I don't care. Mm-hmm. I didn't fucking care anymore. And so I went way, I rebounded the other way mm-hmm. too hard. Yeah. Where now, obviously, I've found a nice middle ground where it's something I enjoy and I enjoy making the other person feel good.
Well, I'm so happy that you discovered that.
Yeah, you are. But there's definitely a period of time where I rebounded the other way. And yeah. I think that that can be applied to any sexual activity, whether it's someone with like, oh, I don't like when people go down on me. I mm-hmm. never get off. Or like, oh, I'm not even going to have sex because I never come. Or like, mm-hmm. I'm not even going to masturbate because I can't finish. Or like, I only finish when I masturbate or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think there is a spectrum. There's a way to find that middle ground that maybe is like you reexamining what you think your beliefs are supposed to be versus yeah. like what actually.
And I think like back to a book like this is just like gives you information to then apply in whatever way you see fit.
Exactly.
And you read it and you're like, oh, okay, I can apply this. Okay, I don't want to apply that. Okay, you know, and that's where you're just way more inclined to then discover. And
right.
like, then it's like exciting to, oh, maybe like, yeah. well, maybe this will work.
Change your life.
Or you like literally read something you never even thought about before yeah. and you're like, ah, maybe that's what it is. Or, oh, yeah. let me do this. And that's where I think having the information is just like so
crucial.
Important and crucial. Yeah. And that's why I think, yeah, anybody that is, I mean, anybody that's anybody
yeah.
should
anyone
be reading something
touching
like that.
Another person.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Pope, especially if you shouldn't be touching people, Pope,
yeah.
You should read this book.
Yeah, honestly.
I also liked, she had a quote in there that said, your orgasm is your business. It belongs to you, not your partner. Wow. And I was like,
with
whoa.
The snappies for that one.
Yeah, give her some snaps. Because the verbiage even just around like, I gave her an orgasm or I couldn't make him come or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you actually might not have anything to do with it.
Yeah. I feel like we're always externalizing it, like being like, it's some factor. I did it or, oh, she did it. That kind of stuff where it's just like, it is in you on your own body.
Because, man, I can't tell you how many times growing up in my 20s, I went places in my head that man had nothing to do with. That I got there on my goddamn own time and my own work. Okay, I did the digging and the deep work to get there, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's power in that, right? Like there's power in also not worrying if this other person is going to feel a type of way about your orgasm, whether it happens or doesn't happen.
Oh,
like
exactly.
Take the pressure off.
Yeah, and I think that's going back to it of like the kind of reverse psychology of it all of okay, taking it off the table. Let's go back to the baseline of just like pleasure. Is this enjoyable for you and me? Is this, you know, that kind of stuff where then your brain's just like, okay, this is enjoyable. Oh, wow. I'm getting close. What's going on?
Yeah, like even scaling it back even further to just exploring context.
Yeah.
Like, does this room make me feel good? Do these sheets make it? Like, you don't even have to be physical with your partner. Just go back to like, does this time of day make me feel good? Like,
oh, yeah. What was it? Like wearing socks as well? I remember hearing something with the statistics on that.
Yeah. Why was it?
It
helped them feel grounded?
I think it was just like a little bit warmer.
Yeah.
And just like comfortability.
But people believed that if you wore socks, you would come easier based on this one study when like the people were like, oh, no, our feet were just cold.
Yeah, exactly. So like some kind of uncomfortability or discomfort.
Yeah.
That can be the smallest thing, but it puts you off and you're just not able to do anything.
Maybe you need cold feet to come.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you've believed your whole life. Yeah.
Warm, cold, whatever you
want. Yeah. Question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever faked an orgasm?
Yeah, because I feel like there's been numerous times, I think like college, drinking, the whole like with alcohol and stuff, that's for a man having issue, like having an orgasm or something like that, where, so there's been, maybe not like a lot of times, but definitely, you know, I definitely remember numerous instances where it's just like, okay, this isn't that fun. Like, cool, whatever. And just, oh yeah. Okay. Because obviously with a condom,
you can't see. Yeah.
You can fake from that point.
Yeah.
Obviously if you're doing different things, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But that was where it definitely came up numerous times.
And did you, and like, I'm assuming for the men's perspective, you weren't like, you didn't care if the woman, like, it would be more embarrassing for her to find out you faked it rather than like her being like, oh, I think me doing this helped, is something that makes someone come.
Yeah. And I think like when you're young, you're just like, oh, I'm not going to explain it. Like, I don't need to, like, oh, I'll just fake it and go about my day. You know, like, oh, whatever.
It's a lot easier.
Whereas like, I think as you get older, you're just like, why do I feel like, let me just, okay, I feel like I'm out of it. Like, can we just, you know, slow down or change it up, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where again, goes back to communication where as long as you're comfortable with that person, the communication is the biggest thing. Cause obviously you do that, it's going to affect them. It affects you different ways. And it's just easier if you can talk about it.
I will say that you are the only person for the entirety of our relationship I have not faked an orgasm with.
Wow.
Because in the past, I've definitely been like, I'm going to stop doing that. I don't think it helps anybody. But sometimes I'll just be like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I it wasn't honest.
Yeah.
But with you, we've been through moments where I've fully pumped on the brakes. I've said, I don't think I'm going to get there. I can't. I'm broken. Something's wrong with me. And then we've turned on the accelerator and I've gone, like, to have gone all the way to a full standstill back to driving on the road.
Yeah.
I've never been able to do that with another partner, A. And I've also never been able to be fully honest about something.
Yeah.
And amazing. It just feels so liberating.
Yeah. I feel like that's like a weight off your shoulders, you know?
Weight off my pussy.
And that makes me very happy. I'm glad that you feel like you're comfortable to do that.
Amen. Henny, some just like takeaway practical tips to remember for this episode. To practice stress management.
Mm-hmm.
Discover your unique accelerators and brakes with your partner.
Very important.
Try to communicate without shame or self-judgment. Talk to your partner mm-hmm. about what works. Let go of what is normal.
Normal.
What you think is normal, and just redefine the idea of sex on your own terms. Remember, it's not a performance. It's a collaboration at times. Mm. You're normal. Hey, if you're still this far, tell us, like, what are your brakes and accelerators? What are contexts you found that work for you or don't? Mm-hmm. Has anything from this episode inspired you to talk to your partner? Henny, where can the people find you?
I knew you were going to do this. Recently, I've been documenting my process back from my surgery and everything on Instagram at RegetFit.
RegetFit is spelled how?
R-E-G-I-T, fit.
And on TikTok?
Oh, on TikTok, I'm just Henrik Regetnik.
Okay.
My full legal name.
Go follow. Also, go ahead and follow us on ConPod on Instagram if you don't already. We do a lot of giveaways there, and we've got some good stuff. I got some Tarte stuff coming up. And hey, we'll see you next week, Confidants. Bye.
Bye.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.